Accession number 27738, real one.
This is the first reel of a taped interview with Joan Dowson in her home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 12th of the 5th, 2004, for the Imperial War Museum in London. And the interviewer is John Bannister. Joan, can we begin the interview by you telling us your full name and where and when you were born?
Dorothy Joan Dowson, born in Peppermint Grove, and did you say when? 4th of June 1918.
What are your earliest memories, do you think, of growing up in Peppermint Grove? Close to the river.
Yes.
In WA.
Well, my grandfather was the Commodore of the Royal Freshwater Bay, now Royal Freshwater Bay Yacht Club, and we went to school at Miss Annie's, a well-known school in Peppermint Grove, where nearly all the children went. And we used to walk down past my grandfather's house to the river. That's what I remember mostly. What we did down there, I don't remember.
What sort of person was your grandfather?
Oh, very warm and definite.
You mentioned that he was Commodore of what is now the Yacht Club. What sort of character was he in relation to being a Commodore?
Oh, well, he'd come from South Australia and he'd done quite well in the army there. And I understand he went to Kalgoorlie. And being an accountant. They came down to get a home, got a home in Peppermint Grove. But I think earlier than that, he was used to go to Rottnest to audit the books. But we didn't take much notice of those things in those days.
What of your father? Tell us about him.
Well, my father was a Tasmanian and came over here to try farming with his brother. And that didn't work out. So he was in the Union Bank for many years at Fremantle. And that's when we were at Cotterstone. He was transferred to Narrogin for 4 years. So we spent that time and then returned to Cotterstone.
Was there a military background to your family at all?
In grandfather Waterhouse, there was. He'd been a captain in South Australia. But my father had very bad eyesight. And he worked in the bank until he couldn't. The doctor said he wouldn't help him unless he left the bank because his eyesight had got so bad. So he was then had a very hard time until he got a job for a retired bank officer in the Perth Clearing House, which he did enjoy. That was all the boys and girls met there several times a day.
So presumably he wasn't able to join the army because of his bad eyesight. Did you have relatives that had served, for instance, in the First World War?
Yes, I had three uncles. Three of my Grandpa Waterhouse's sons served in the Light Horse and in the Middle East.
Can you tell us your grandfather's name and his son that was to serve in the First World War?
Well, Ernest Frederick Waterhouse, and his sons were Fred and Jack, and I've just forgotten for the minute.
That's okay. What was the reputation of the the light horse?
Well, we were too young to understand, but we thought we were very proud because Anzac Day we'd meet down the bottom of the hill at the Manners Hill Park now. No, actually, I'm sorry, it was the place where the Royal Yacht Club is now, because the first yacht club was at the end of Irvine Street, and they moved to this lovely old home, and it's since become a beautiful yacht club.
What was the feeling like as a young lady going to Anzac Day that you can recall?
We just felt pretty proud to go, but we didn't think a lot of it. We just thought, oh, well, my uncle's involved and there's a band and a... But didn't create a great deal of...
Did your uncles ever speak to you about their experiences in the First World War?
Not as much as we speak about our war.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that the same thing applies now. You know, the civilian people aren't very interested in a lot of them in the war. But we'd just hear that, you know, my uncle had been buried in mud up to his neck or something for a while, and that's why he had to have so many pillows. But otherwise, it didn't sort of make a big impression. They were often in hospital at the Repat Hospital, and you just go and visit them, but you just did that because you wanted to.
Mm. What sorts of things were they in hospital for, do you recall?
Oh, I think a lot of different complaints.
People talking, having chest problems,
a lot of
gas.
Yes, but it didn't register very much, just that they were sick.
Given your recollections of your uncles, given your recollections of Anzac Day and your relations, obviously having served, your grandfather having been a military chap, what were your impressions of how the First World War had been as you grew up, do you think? Did you have an opinion about what it had been like?
Yes, we felt deeply that they'd been away and from their family and needed a bit of extra care, but otherwise we just went on busily.
What was the general opinion, though, of what the war had been like? And you mentioned knowing all of these people and seeing their situation, but what was the general attitude towards what the First World War had actually been like?
I don't think we spent much time thinking about that.
Okay.
Especially as my father, although he had 3 rejection medals because he tried to join the army, and it wasn't in the house. If being the father had been in the army, we would have noticed it, well, I think.
Was there a sense of him being disappointed about not having been able to join the army, do you think?
He never said so, but he was very sympathetic for men who had been.
In relation to the First World War, and we'll get on to the Second World War, how had the Germans been seen following the First World War, do you think, by the average Australian?
Well, my aunt married a naturalised Australian, German, and even though he was naturalised, he felt pretty miserable and went back to Germany at the end of the war, and they were so poor the Germans for many years, and you'd have pathetic letters thanking us for food parcels. And so that's all the impression it made, really.
How had they been seen by the average Australian following the First World War, given that they had been the enemy during the First World War? Did that make any difference?
What, to treatment of them? Or?
To attitudes towards the Germans.
Well, we didn't seem to meet many of them.
How was England seen from the average Australian's point of view between the wars?
I just think we took it for granted.
What did you take for granted?
Well, the fact that we're allied to England very closely. But as we didn't travel so much in those days, it didn't have an impact like it does now.
Well, we can talk about that. But in relation to King and country, how did you feel, given that you were living, growing up in Australia?
Well, we were very patriotic and anxious to learn all about them. And of course, if they visited Perth, that was the great event of the year.
Do you recall that happening?
Yes, I can remember when we were in the country and came to stay with some friends in Pepin Grove. It was I forget who it was, who was driving down the Perth-Fremantle Road, and everybody was...
Was this pre-war or post-Second World War?
Pre-Second World War. Mm. Mm. I don't even remember who it was.
Okay. We'll look it up.
I know Perth was very, very highly decorated in banners.
Let's talk about the coming of the Second World War and what that meant. When was it that you started to realise that there was a Second World War brewing?
Well, it seemed to be 1936. We all sort of felt something terrible was going to happen.
That was the year of the Olympic Games. Do you recall the Olympic Games?
No.
What were your first impressions, or what was your first knowledge of Hitler, for instance?
Well, the main impact was when Chamberlain first returned from Germany, and everyone was sort of very upset because they thought he'd let us down.
People talk of Chamberlain coming back waving this piece of paper, 1938, peace in our time, never again are we going to go to war. How was that initially seen? Did people believe that was the case?
No.
Why didn't they believe that, do you think? Hitler had signed this piece of paper.
Yes. I didn't realise that. But, you know, you just have a feeling. You don't study politics very much at that age. We just sort of thought that's why we joined the VADs, and nearly every, or many, many young women, hundreds, did first aid and home nursing.
I'm interested that you talk of joining the VAD. We will get on to that. I'm wanting to speak about the situation in relation to, as you grew up through the Depression years and coming out of the Depression, how you looked at the world, your interest in Europe, for instance. Did you have much interest?
No, not really.
What did you want to be? As a teenager, for instance, growing up, did you have any idea?
Well, I very much wanted to get a job because it was in the Depression and things were very tough for the family, and with my father not having a good position. So I left school early because I felt I'd do better. Well, you couldn't afford to go to university in those days.
So what was it that you were to end up doing?
Well, I was secretary in an insurance company.
I understand also that you were interested in ballet. What did that involve? Had you been serious about ballet?
Well, I had always been very interested because even when we lived in Cottesloe, there was a Jan Stacey, a well-known and loved teacher. He had a class down at the local, I've even forgotten the name of the hall. Lesser Hall, yes. And I just went there and then told Mother I'd been. And they made sure that I went again.
I see pictures of you actually doing ballet. Where are some of those pictures from? Were you doing much performing pre-war?
Yes, we did. There are some of them starting off at the very beginning. When you...
Whereabouts would some of those performances have taken place?
Well, my mother was a great Red Cross worker and they were always having fetes and especially Pepman Grove, they had some lovely homes like Mrs. Rishworth's home. And if they had a fete, we'd dance. Would be an item on the program. Mm.
Did you ever consider that you might take ballet as a career?
Not in those days. And then when I got older, I realised how much time that it takes, so I didn't have my whole heart in it. Because when everyone was going off for sport, you'd be having ballet rehearsals.
As the war approached, obviously 38 had came and went, the war did look as though it was going to happen. Germany presumably had hoodwinked everyone and
yes.
They marched into Poland. What do you recall of the coming of the Second World War?
Well, I was working in the insurance company then and I think we felt apprehensive, but it was just a cold, horrible feeling of what the future held.
Obviously, the thought that Chamberlain would come back waving this piece of paper is quite an emotional memory for you. How was the immediate reaction seen when the Second World War had come about? It was only 20 years after the First World War had finished.
Yes, well, everybody.
It was the same people again.
Yes.
How was that seen?
Well, you just took it for granted. I mean, you just, that's happened, and so you realise that the men have to go away, and that was the biggest hurt. And then you just get on and did what you could.
I'm interested to talk to you about the men going away. Who did you know that would end up going away?
To the Second World War?
Yes.
Well, nearly all my friends. Male friends went away to join the Air Force. Or my brother was in the Naval Reserve and in the bank, and he could have been manpowered, but of course they, if they were keen enough, they got out of that eventually.
Why do you think there was this interest to go and serve during the Second World War, given that Australia was so far away?
Well, that's one reason I really can't think of. We just took it for granted that England was in trouble and we should help them.
Obviously, men had a specific option: Army, Air Force, Navy.
Yes.
War is a man's, inherently, people
yes.
talk of war being a man's domain, a man's problem, something that man created. How did you've been now 20, how did women such as yourself see war, do you think, when it arrived?
Well, with great fear, because all the, for instance, we lost, we didn't know what we were going to lose, but nearly every home in our street was affected and lost a son. And it was just one big tragedy after another.
What was the general attitude of society, do you think, of women's place with the outbreak of war?
I think they got motivated greatly with transport. They had horse transport units and motor, and of course the VADs we did voluntary hospital and unpaid work at the hospitals.
People obviously see that men were encouraged to join. To what degree were women encouraged to do something for the war effort, do you think?
Well, their main thing is duty, and the ones later on who didn't join, they had to. I mean, what do you say when they...
Manpowered.
I don't think anyone escaped that, but that was when the war was well into its way.
Presumably women could stay at home and knit socks for soldiers, that sort of
yes.
thing.
Yes.
Was it encouraged for women to actually join up in a particular service and leave the country in the same way that men were, do you think?
No, it was taken for granted that the nurses, the sisters went, the trained nurses, as part of the every contingent.
Let's talk about your role and how that came about in the VAD. Had you had any interest in this sort of work pre-war, before things started to look a bit dicey?
Well, we'd been VADs for 3 years.
Why had you been a VAD for that time, do you think? What had drawn you to the...
Because we thought that something was going to happen. And we used to meet at the drill halls and have army drill, which we took for granted, and first aid and home nursing.
What was it that inspired you to want to become involved, do you think? Was there a particular reason that you wanted to actually get involved?
Just duty. Like joining the Girl Guards or something else. You can cut that out.
That's all right. In relation to this duty, did you understand what would be involved in the VAD?
No, but we were already involved because we used to help the hospitals and...
Did you know much of the history of the VAD?
No, not then.
People talk of Florence Nightingale
yes.
and those sorts of people. Had she been the sort of person that you looked up to?
No, but we learned to as we went along. Respected what she'd done.
What was involved in you joining the voluntary aid detachment?
It meant that we just went along to the local group and and joined up. And then we started weekly or having lessons from different doctors, some of the leading doctors and specialists.
Did you need to know anything about medicine? Did you have to have any sort of background in nursing or anything?
No, but we learned it.
Okay. As the war, the initial period of the war, people have called that, I mean the immediate period of the war, called that, to some degree, the phony war. There wasn't much going on in the first few months. And then all of a sudden, England is pushed off the continent. 1940, Dunkirk. What do you recall of Dunkirk?
Oh, very little, except that it was a big event.
Was there ever a fear that you, Australia, would be on the losing side? Do you think?
Well, it got more fearful as the time went on.
How were the Germans seeing their...
Well, just as the enemy.
A formidable enemy, I would have thought.
Yes, that's right.
How were they seeing, given that they had so easily pushed the Allies off the continent at Dunkirk?
Well, I think they were frightened because they took over Poland in the beginning. That was the...
You're talking about your involvement, your recollections of Poland. But when Dunkirk happened, people talk of the Blitzkrieg. People talk of the Germans having tanks that couldn't be coped with. What was the general feeling in the air when you recall some of those things concerning the Germans and how easily they were getting on with things?
I just think you felt you had to cope with what happened. There's nothing much you could do about it.
How would you have rated morale at that time?
Good.
Did that inspire you to take a more active role, do you think?
I felt you had to do the best you could, the most you could. And I think that's what most young women at that time felt.
What did your training involve?
In the VADs,
yes.
It would involve first aid lessons and first aid and nursing. And we had lots of lectures, which I still have the copies of a lot. And we had a huge camp at Swanbourne, 500 girls, and went through the gas chamber. And they tried to do all... We were very lucky that they trained us very well.
When you mentioned that you went through the gas chamber, what was that all about?
Oh, just to show us, to tell us what to do in gas. We'd put on the equipment and we can always say we've been through a gas chamber.
So they were preparing you in case you would ever be in a situation of gas attack.
Yes.
What did that involve then? What was the equipment that they made? Well,
we had a mask and didn't stay in it very long, but that's my recollection, that we just had to go through this building or aerial room.